Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. It's already Friday. Another week has come and gone. We have an astonishing Theater of the Mind coming up a little bit later on in the show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Tim is still off. He'll be back with us on Monday with more supernatural news and parashare. Thank you for all the love and light and prayers you've been sending his way. He is feeling it. We're seeing some changes for the better, and hopefully he'll be back up and running theoretically, figuratively, and spiritually with me back where he belongs across the microphone. And doing the show on a more regular basis. As fun as it's been, it's always great to have my brother from another mother here in studio with me as we continue to do these shows. But he's still working behind the scenes, folks. Every episode we cut, I send over to him. He edits, produces, gets it all together, and puts it out there for you guys. So he's still back there. He's still listening, and he's still part of our world. Thank you, Tim, for all the work that you're doing behind the scenes. Tonight, we've got a fascinating guest joining us. Chris Jericho, who's a good friend of us here on Podcast One, and if you haven't had a chance to listen to his show, go check it out. Talk is Jericho. It's a great program. And although he's a wrestler, he covers a myriad of different topics, from the strange to the supernatural to wrestling to politics and entertainment, music, you name it, he's got it. And there's all these great topics. He reached out and he said, Dave, you've got to have this woman on your show. I just interviewed her. She's fantastic. And she needs to be heard by your audience. So I was happy to book her. And if she doesn't live up to the expectations, folks, you can just send the hate mail right over to Chris Jericho. I'm just kidding. She's great. Sister of Darkness, the Chronicles of a Modern Exorcist. Joining us tonight is Rachel Stavis. She is the world's only non-denominational exorcist. And she's the subject of a forthcoming major motion picture. Her new book tells the astonishing true story of a riveting chronicle of wrestling entities from infected souls, showing how pain and trauma open us to attachments from forces that drain our energy. She's here to spend the evening with us talking about her story. Welcome to the show, Rachel. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
No pressure when the big guy is pushing you down on us saying you've got to have this woman on the show. Don't feel worried. Don't, no pressure. But I expect you to bring the darkness for us tonight.
Oh, I think I will. Rachel, no worries there.
Has the paranormal always been a part of your world?
Yes, fortunately or unfortunately. When I was a child, like most kids, I would complain that there were monsters under the bed or monsters in the closet, and parents would come and say, there's nothing there, go to sleep. And for me, they didn't go away. And I didn't know that seeing entity or monsters as they looked to me as a child, I didn't know it was weird until people started telling me that there was nothing there and they didn't see it. And so I started to try and suppress it as much as I could, pretending it wasn't there, counting, you know, doing all the things that you see even in movies now. And sometimes it would work and sometimes it wouldn't. And I went on, you know, teenage years being a weird teenager and living my life and trying to become a not weird adult. And I ended up writing for television and film, which is what I do as my living.
Well, then you failed miserably if you're trying not to be a weird adult and you ended up writing for TV and movies.
And I write horror, so I mean, even weirder, I guess.
Well, I'm curious about somebody that had those kind of abilities since youth and saw a lot of weird things and the dark things. Did you ever start to question your own sanity?
Oh, yes, of course. I mean, again, in the beginning, like, I was so young, I didn't know that that was a sanity question. You know what I mean? I just saw it. And then, of course, yeah, when people start pushing it down and saying that that's not possible, you buy into that notion very quickly. I mean, in our society, we don't really talk too much about spirituality, and our spiritual bodies and all these things sound really crazy to people. And so for me, that was not different growing up. And so, as I got older, I certainly questioned my sanity. And when I was much older, and we're not going to get into how old, you know, because I'm still a woman, nobody wants to discuss their age. But, you know, at some point, let's say in my adult life, I had a traumatic experience that kind of opened the floodgates back up, where I couldn't push it down as much as I could before. And when that happened, it was like the floodgates completely opened. And, you know, I was now on the street seeing the homeless guy yelling, but I can see what he's yelling at now. And I couldn't push it away. And when that happened, I basically sat down with myself and spirit, and I looked up into the sky, and I was like, well, I'm either crazy or you want me to do something with this thing that I've had all my life, so we need to figure this out. And of course,
I'm sorry, I don't mean to stop you. But when you're thrown out that you're walking down the street and you see the crazy guy screaming at something, you are seeing what he's screaming at.
Yes, I actually physically see entities.
Okay. Are they aware that you're seeing them?
Yes, I think they've always been aware. I can't tell you exactly for sure, but I do get visitations, and I get things called bad moons, which we can get into as well, which is visitations from sundown, you know, to sunrise every few months. And in the visitation, when they come to visit me, they're very aware that I can see them. So I assume they know I can see them all the time. Yes.
do they seem irked that you can see them, especially the not so happy beasties?
Sometimes. It really depends. It's such a weird, it's so hard to describe my relationship, I guess, with entities, because sometimes it seems like they're more curious. Like, my visitations are occasionally malevolent, but sometimes it looks like mere curiosity. Of course, when I'm working to remove entity, or I feel entity in a space, but I'm trying to suppress the visual. So when I'm out in public now, in, you know, crowded spaces, like let's say you're at a concert or at a school or you're doing a speaking engagement or whatever, I try not to see, because I'd see them everywhere. Occasionally there will be one that's highly malevolent that I will see anyway, and they are very aware that I can see them.
Wow. That seems like sensory overload.
Oh, yeah.
Rachel, to be in this, can you shut this ability off? Can you click the switch so that you can spend an afternoon at the movies and not see, you know, Beelzebub hanging over the shoulder of the guy in the third row?
You know, it depends. It depends. And we can get into this too. There's so much, but there are different classifications of entities that I see often and that I remove from people. There's a hierarchy, if you will, of entities. So it depends on what I'm seeing when I'm out. If it's the normal run-of-the-mill entity stuff for me, oftentimes, yes, I can tune that out to a certain degree. But again, if it's something very malevolent or something that's taunting, or, you know, and that does happen as well, I won't be able to tune that out. I'll be able to see it.
So it's like you can see you can push away the ghosts and the other things that are out there. But if there's something dark where you need to kind of step up and do your job, there's no pushing it away.
Right. I mean,
okay.
And sometimes it's not even to do my job. If I'm out in public and I see someone who has something and the entity is just making its presence known, sometimes, like I said, it's just to be taunting, because I'm not going to probably rush up to someone I don't know who knows nothing about me and just be like, hey, you know, because I'm not a medium, right? People love to hear from mediums. I can see deceased people. Deceased people, by the way, are not entities. It's a completely different thing. But a medium.
Explain that to us then. People are not entities. How do you explain that?
So entities are what people consider demons. That's what entity is.
Mm-hmm.
That is not deceased people. Deceased people are, you know, people who've passed. That's a completely different thing. Entities were never alive and were never people in the sense that we understand it. Does that make sense?
No, not to me yet. Okay. Just walk me through that so I understand it exactly.
So, you know, all throughout history, from ancient Sumeria, basically, on that we have of recorded history anyway, people have talked about monsters, things from hell or whatever, right? That's what I see. Those are entities.
Okay.
Entities exist in, it's not hell to me. It's a, what I call the etheric space. So it's another dimension, essentially, if you will. Right. And they move in and out of where we are. Some of them don't interact with us at all. Some of them are high beings. Those are the ones that give, like, angels, gods, whatever you believe in. And then there are those who are what I call low beings, right? Low frequency beings. And those are entities that take, that feed from people. We're kind of in the middle of that zone.
How do you live a normal life, Rachel, when you have got this kind of... Listen, I've got 7 kids. That's like...
Wow.
That's like 7 whirling dervishes zipping around you at all times, draining you, pulling you, pushing you, challenging you. Yeah, that's right. Physical forms. How do you live a life, date, work, do everything, and meanwhile you're just kind of thrust into this dark world all around you at all times? That seems like a gift that is too much for anyone human to take.
Well, to be fair, 2 things to say to that, right? The first thing is I really don't know any different. I don't know what it's like to live without it. So there's that.
Okay.
And secondly, I'm have to say it's hard. to do all of those things, really. I mean, people are like, I was telling Jericho this in his podcast, that, you know, people are sometimes very repelled by my energy too, because I'm a lot, you know, there's a lot going on with me, right? And people can sense that. And some people are really into that and want to be fast friends and some, you know, whatever. And some people are like, keep that totally away from me. I don't want anything to do with that. Or sometimes they go through both. And so it's hard. Like, you know, I definitely feel different than most people. I don't know if I'm the only one who can do exactly what I do. Mm-hmm. But it definitely keeps you to a certain degree separate, if that makes sense.
Sure. So once you realize you have this gift and you're going about it, how do you go from realizing, okay, I can see this stuff all around me, to I cast thee out in the name of all that is good? How, you know, I mean, at what point does this turn into a battle instead of just an eyewitness account?
Well, I guess it happened then when I could no longer turn it off, and I just sat down and was like, okay, I'm either completely nuts, or I'm supposed to do something with this. I mean, why would you just have it? If you just look at the nature of things, right? That's stupid. It doesn't make sense. You wouldn't just have it just to view it. So I had to be like, okay, if this is legitimate and what I've been seeing all my life is correct, and now it's coming back like crazy, then there has to be a reason for this, and I need to know what that reason is. And that's when I connected to spirit, which I do a lot. And now, of course, having done it so much during this process of helping, I don't know, thousands of people at this point, it's a very clear connection. And at that time, I just started getting the information of, okay, this is why it's here. This is why I have it. This is why I can see it. And I obviously prefer not to be crazy. So I prefer to believe that what I'm doing is helping people, and I've seen it with my eyes, and I know exactly what it is, so I know it is. But at that time, of course, I didn't know if that was going to work or not. And I just took it in and said, okay, I guess this is what I'm doing now, so let's try it and see how it goes. And it's kind of been going ever since.
The idea that you have this healing gift to start pulling them out, when was this first realization, and how did you employ it the first time?
I think now, I'm not totally not sharing my age, but I have to think about this for a moment. I think it was 8 years ago now, maybe nine years ago. And it started again with that conversation with myself and spirit, your universe, whatever you believe in. And then what I started to do was I started to just work on friends and people I knew first, because I didn't want to screw up anybody I didn't know.
Right.
I was okay doing it with people I did know who were volunteering to be guinea pigs of that service. And that's what I did. And I started working on people I knew. I started kind of trying to figure out, okay, how do I do this? And then it became a natural progression of, you know, like being a medium or like, you know, being a psychic or whatever. All of that it's something that they're, of course, born with, but at the same time, it's still a muscle that has to be flexed, right? It's still a skill that has to be honed. And that's essentially what I was doing too. And I did that over the course of years. And then what ended up happening was I was word of mouth for a very long time, maybe just until basically this year. I was word of mouth, and people would come and they would feel different. They would understand what happened to them, and then they would tell somebody they knew, and it just kind of snowballed.
So, first of all, do all of us have some kind of attachment?
Not everyone, but a lot more people than people think. Most people do. Most people do have attachment, and I'm not saying that to be scary. I know it's going to sound scary.
Too late, yeah.
Right? It's going to sound scary. Of course it is. And again, a lot of that still to do with people just not understanding what entity is exactly and how it works and all of those things, which we can get into. But yes, most people have attachments. Why do most people have attachments? Because everything that you know about exorcism is wrong. So people have attachments because when we go through traumatic experiences, and again, trauma can be anything for anyone, right? We are not to judge anybody else's trauma. It can be huge trauma that we are able to withstand, or small traumas that other people would think aren't any big deal, but they add up, right? So we go through these traumatic experiences, and what happens is our frequency, the vibration that we put out, so everything is energy, we're putting out energy, right? That frequency starts to lower. And we're not in a society that is conscious enough yet. We're working on it day by day, but we're not in a society that's conscious enough yet to understand that our frequency, our thoughts, everything that we do is energy.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't nurture that. We don't know how to fix it. We don't know how to help it, right? We go through things where we get depression, anxiety, all these things, and, you know, we turn to therapy and pills and all of that, which is great and fine. And I don't say that's not helpful. Absolutely, that's helpful and necessary. But we're not looking at the other things. We're not looking at that spiritual part of ourselves. And when we have low frequency, we start to attract things that are low frequency, right? The things that feed from those frequencies. And that's where entity comes in.
Are we ever surrounded by spirits of loved ones?
All the time. Oh,
okay.
My gosh.
Are they ever attached to us, or do they not have that ability?
It's not the same thing. So when you're talking about entity attachment, you're essentially talking about the word possession, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's possession. That's a feeding. A deceased person doesn't feed from you. There's nothing to gain from that. That's not a sustenance, a life force for them. Deceased people are around all the time. Dead people are very chatty. They love you. They want to talk to you constantly. They're around all the time. But that's more for protection and messages and things like that. For good things, for positive things.
Well, now I've heard from some mediums that, like, spirits do attach and they can kind of siphon off of you, especially if you were a drug addict or an alcoholic or an abusive person, that sometimes these spirits will attach to you to kind of relive this, or maybe even push you down dark corridors you normally would not have gone down in order to get that contact high.
I can't say anything about what any medium has said, but in my experience, when you're talking about deceased people who are negative energy people, who are low frequency people in general, they're draining just by being around. Does that make sense? So it's not an attachment in the way that a possession is. It's that they're around and somebody's empathic and they're feeling that drain. And that's just simply the drain from that person's own energy. Does that make sense? Right? So that the deceased person has shit energy.
Okay.
That's a shit energy person who's enjoying being around someone who's living. Right? And then you have this person who's living who has no idea they're empathic. That's usually what the drain comes from. That's the same kind of drain that you have from, you know, you're around people who are just exhausting to be around. Right? They're energy vampires, if you will. It's definitely not possession. They're not possessing you, but they're just fucking draining. So you're around this person. They're draining you because you're empathic, because you're like a sponge pulling that energy in, and you're not, again, this is part of that consciousness, that spiritual aspect of being. But people don't know that they're pulling other people's energy in because they just don't know it. And they have no idea that they're empathic. They've never thought about that, right? So it's the same kind of thing.
All right. I follow you on this.
Yeah.
I do. I'm starting to follow.
Right.
Right. When you're surrounded by these beings, are you ever overwhelmed? Do they ever start beating you down physically and spiritually? Because I would guess they would want to work in concert with one another to stop you from doing what you're doing.
You'd think so, but they don't ever do that. Not really. Entities, the way they work, especially if you're talking about people. Now, if you're talking about places that have entity, that can sometimes be different, and we could talk about that. But with people, entities are very selfish. And so they don't want to be sharing anybody. Once they've got a good food source, they don't want to share that food source. And another thing about entity that is not portrayed correctly in movies, but, you know, no begrudging that, because who knows it, right, is that they can't jump from person to person. It doesn't work that way. Entity needs
a
specific
frequency.
Say that
for me one more time. Yeah, you kind of cut in and out there for a second, and you warned me this might happen with your energy, but...
Yes. Oh, it happens. It does happen. So, entities cannot jump from person to person.
Okay.
So what they portray in movies, that, you know, when you have people coming in to do an exorcism and everyone's like, oh my God, they're going to go from whatever to you. So be careful. No, it doesn't really work that way.
Okay.
The reason why it doesn't work that way is, again, frequency based. So there are different kinds of entities. Not every entity is the same. And those kinds of entities are seeking a specific frequency signature to feed off. It's very rare that a room full of people would all have the exact same signature.
Right. I guess that'd be completely impossible almost, right, to get everybody into that same zone.
Yeah, it's pretty fingerprinty, if you will, right? So, I mean, it's not impossible. Like a very specific, let's say, anxiety signature, as an anxiety that someone is putting out, could be really similar to someone else's, but it's not that common, right? So if you had, I don't know, I don't even know what the numbers would be, but let's just make it up. If you had like 1,000 people in a room, you know, maybe you'd have two, if you're lucky, who have the same energy signature or similar enough. So yeah, it doesn't happen that much.
The beings that are around these people, these malevolent spirits, when you start to go to war to get rid of these creatures, do they hurt the human form, the host, when you're trying to do that to stop you from doing what you're doing?
It depends on the entity. So,
well, has it happened? Have you?
Yeah,
have
oh, you yeah, noticed? Of course.
Okay, sure. Tell me about one of those experiences.
Okay, well, unfortunately, that happens most often to children.
Oh.
So, yeah, to children who have entity, because they're just so small and pure and all kinds of things. And when children get entities, and there are different kinds of entities that start with childhood, but some of them are just wayward that they get like adults get. When children have entity, it's because oftentimes the children, when their frequency is hit through trauma, it's hit very hard. Kids tend to take on all the adult problems as their own. And so when they have a particularly traumatic incident, they always feel like it's their fault. what happens when that happens? You lower your frequency. And they lower their frequency very dramatically when that happens because they're just so, they just feel so much. You know, they're not as closed off as adults tend to be. And unfortunately, so that hits them very hard. And
so there's no built-in protection for children, the innocent souls. It's just, no, we're all kind of feeding force for whatever wants to attach to us?
Well, yes and no. We do have built-in mechanisms that keep us safe, but we don't know, again, we're just not as conscious a society yet to teach that to our children. Here's what you have, right? Here's how to do that. Because we as adults are not teaching that to ourselves. We're not doing those things. But yes, we do. We absolutely do. We can inherently raise our frequency and vibration. And I can talk about how to do that as well. But we do have all of those tools. We are born with those tools. It's just we in this society edge them out a lot. So by the time we hit adulthood, we're pretty defeated. You know?
I can relate to that.
Many people are pretty defeated, pretty right. cynical, pretty upset with their lives, don't know how to manifest better things, don't know how to do all of these things, do not realize, in essence, that we are very powerful beings. We don't remember that, you know?
Right. Which is something I've been talking about on the show a lot. I think we don't give ourselves enough credit.
Oh, no.
For what
for
we're
sure.
capable of.
We are capable for changing everything around us. Everything. And we don't remember that we are spiritual beings, right? We don't remember why we came into these bodies at this time to do these things. We're just like stuck in the rat race of things. And it takes a while for people to wake up, and some people, again, never become conscious, you know, in this lifetime anyway. So we do have those tools, yes, but we don't teach our children that, unfortunately. And we just teach our children, you know, by way of what we do, which is what they observe the most and emulate the most. And so when we're doing those things as adults and we're like, everything sucks, then what's a child going to take on? Of course, then everything sucks. So with kids, I often take kids on emergency basis because kids to me are always an emergency.
Our parents, here would be my situation, and this is no slight against you, but being a parent and being very protective of my children, to hear, okay, we've got a non-denominational exorcist that can pull these demons out for you, help you with this. She works in the entertainment industry. do people ever go, oh, I think she's wackadoo. Were you ever on Sally Jesse Raphael? I mean, was it always, you know, this kind of deal? I would be so frightened of exposing my child to somebody who claims to help with that. How do you kind of get over that hump? Or is it, again, because of word of mouth? People say, listen, she's the one to go to. This happened to us. This is what happened. And now we're free and clear.
There's a lot of that, yes. And you have to keep in mind that if someone is bringing their child to me in the middle of the night, then they're doing that as a last resort. That's a last resort thing you're going to do.
Gotcha.
You are convinced wholeheartedly that that's what's going on with your child, and you will do anything to get it out. And that's normally how I see children. But again, to answer your question, do people think I'm crazy? Oh, yes, absolutely. Why not? You go on the internet. You can see how people think I'm crazy. They think I'm a con artist, even though I don't charge people.
Yeah, that's the craziest kind of con. See, you are nuts.
I'm a terrible con artist. Right. I'll tell you that. I'm making quite a living. You know, we do, obviously, I do, there is a suggested donation if you can to help people who, you know, need to come in at all hours. Of course, if you can, great. If you can't, it still works for you.
Okay. So let's say I've been dealing with, and this is me, I deal with anxiety, I deal with depression. They come at me in waves that make no sense. So I have no idea what the hell triggers these things, Rachel. And, you know, sometimes I do. Sometimes I'm like, oh, you know, I'm missing my mom today and that wound is still fresh. So that kind of brings on some of this. But then there are other times when I'm I've started to avoid going to locations where there are a lot of people because I start to get edgy there. So
yeah,
I was just
going to say that to you. Yeah. Like you're one of those people who's very, very empathic and picking things up like sponge. So some of that anxiety and depression is not your own.
Right. So if I had that going on, first of all, would I need to see you face to face? Could I call you and say, Rachel, this is what's going on? Or do you prefer not to know? Are you like a medium in the sense you don't want to be front loaded? You're just going to try to tap in and figure out what's going on with me.
It's a little of both. So what happens for me when people come to me is the first thing we do before I start anything is we have a sit down conversation. And I always ask people to tell me why they came to me, right? Very specifically, like, you know, what's going on with them to make them want to come to an exorcist, right? Because again, I'm usually a last resort.
Right.
So we sit down, we have that conversation. And why I do that is because I actually can hear their guides while they speak to me. So they might tell me one thing, but their guides are saying a completely different story. And that often happens when people are like very shy about what's really going on with them, or they're looking at what I call the
so like, our guides are ratting us out is what you're saying.
Oh my God. Yeah. All the time. Because people tend to deal with their branches, not their roots. Right. Because there's so many layers and layers like a pearl over the root. And so they're going, okay, I have addiction problems, or okay, I cannot conceive, or okay, this is what's going on. And the guides are saying over here, no, here's the root. The root is the relationship with their mother, or this terrible accident that they had, or this childhood invisible friend that's actually an entity, or whatever is going on. And then I will tell you, here's what's actually happening. Okay. And that's when the floodgates kind of open for them and everything starts coming
out. So what people are doing is they're talking to you about the symptoms. You're going to what the disease is.
Exactly. Because one beautiful, beautiful, wonderful thing about this gift, if you will, that was like a curse forever. Is that if I'm standing with somebody and I'm really tuning into them, I can actually see the worst things about them before the best.
Hmm.
And that's a lot of reason also why people don't like being around me. Right? Because they're like, oh shit, she's going to see something I don't want.
Right. I was just, my brain was just spinning of the 300 things I don't want you to pick up on right now, but it's too late. It's already out there, Rachel.
And I always say to people, like, I'll never say that to you, but it doesn't mean I don't know. And so, you know, you're comfortable with that or you're not.
Right. Okay. So if I were to call you, then I say, this is what's going on. You're going to try to help me get to the root of that problem. Can you do that over the phone, or does it have to be an in-person, one-on-one kind of situation?
So I don't pull entities from people over the phone or over Skype. What I can do over the phone or over Skype is discuss with you what's going on with you. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And then give you some tools as to how to slowly fix that for yourself, because it's not as fast, obviously. Like, when people come to me, I take that out in no time. What you have to do on your own will take time and patience. Right? It's like chipping away at it versus flooding, you know, the body and spirit with it. So I don't do any of that over the phone, because it's really not safe to do that over the phone or over Skype. I have a space that's specifically set up to do that properly. It's what I call like the one-way vortex, where, you know, you come in, things come out, they don't come back in. Over the phone or over Skype, I don't have control over that. You know what I mean? So it would be too dangerous a situation to just try it.
Okay. All right. Now once you've found, okay, Dave Schrader, you have something. Now, how do you determine if it's, well, obviously, are you seeing it? Does it look evil? Does it look like the quintessential horror movie monsters? What does it look like when somebody has a dark attachment to them?
It depends on what it is. So there's a hierarchy of different kinds of attachments. The ones that I deal with the most often, the ones that people have 95% of the time, are what I call Clives, Wraiths, Tricksters, and it just keeps going from there. Yes, to answer that question, they do look like horror movie drawings. I call Clives Clives, because they look like Clive Barker drawings to me. So they all have names based on what they look like to me.
Okay.
And I don't know if you remember Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Sure.
Okay, so you know the original artist?
Yes.
Very tapped into what Entity looks like.
Really? I think they're doing a movie version of that
now. They are. That would be very scary.
Yeah, really. I don't know if you want to give that the power, but too late now, right?
But they do look a lot like that. I mean, not exactly like that, but some people, again, without even knowing it, we're talking about very empathic people in the world, are just tapped into things that they're supposed to bring into life for people to see. And that's how I feel that is, because it does look a lot like that.
We have to take a quick break. We've got a lot more with Rachel. The book is out and available in October. You can pre-order it now. Sister of Darkness, The Chronicles of a Modern Exorcist. Right now, it's time for Amazon to present another edition from our dark archives of the Theater of the Mind. Today's episode, The Unwanted Visitor. A real-life account from Officer J. O'Dowd. My partner and I had been enjoying a rare day of quiet in our town. 3 hours left in our evening shift, and aside from a few minor traffic violations, we had no major altercations, which was a welcome change from the normally busy cycle of activity that we faced daily. Our town was by no means crime-filled, but we weren't Mayberry either. Lots of barroom brawls, shoplifting, the daily strife from the mobile home park, and unruly parents at local sporting events filled our days. We were hanging at our normal corner, watching for speed demons and basking in the quiet. The sun had just blinked out for the night, leaving a sky of mixed purples, light blues, and dark velvety blackness. There was nothing but the sound of traffic buzzing the streets when a call came over the radio.
We have a domestic dispute at 123 City Street. Parent is hysterical and claiming their 12-year-old is out of control. Please respond.
I clicked the radio, secured it to my shoulder, and alerted dispatch that we were on our way, and we were assured backup would be close behind. This was a bit rare. Parents usually called us dealing with older children, mostly early 20s and, in some cases, into their 30s. It usually involved drugs or alcohol. But a 12-year-old out of control? This was new to me. We pulled up from outside. You could hear raised voices. The first thing we took notice of was that it sounded like a man. In my estimation, a very large man doing most of the yelling. Although from our vantage point, it was not exactly clear what was being said. This was followed by the sounds of crashing and things being tossed around. I grabbed my taser, hoping I would not have to use it, but unsure of what exactly was going on inside, so I thought it was better to be safe than sorry. We approached the door, and we could hear multiple voices yelling and screaming and carrying on inside. I rapped on the door firmly, announcing ourselves.
"Open up! It's the police! We're responding to someone in distress!"
That's when I heard the mother call out from inside. The cries quieted and was replaced with the sound of loud choking noises and what sounded like muted kicking and fighting going on. My partner peeked into the side window and shook his head. "Go, go, get in there!" I grabbed the handle to the door and turned it, bracing to push my way back into the home. The door gave way, then was forcibly pushed back against me, sending me backwards out the door. I remember thinking to myself, this was one big fella, and this was going to take a lot of effort from all of us to bring this situation under control. My partner yelled again, "Come on, go, go!" I told him, "Hey man, I'm trying. This guy is big, he's holding a door." As I continued struggling to push my way in against the immense weight of whoever was on the other side of the door, Jim looked in and said, "There's no one there, push harder." With that, I gave the door my full weight and shoved. Finally, the pressure relented and we scrambled in. There, in the middle of the living room, was what appeared to be a thin, 4'9" little girl straddling a much older, much larger woman, banging her head against the floor with sickening thumps. We called out, "Let her go! Get off the woman!" The woman beneath her was struggling, but I could tell she was in the danger point, and I opened my mouth to yell orders again, and I was startled by the sound of a large man yelling,
"Get out of here! You're not wanted here!"
I spun on my heels with taser ready, and there was no one there. I turned back and gave my partner a quizzical look. Then he ran towards the child, hovering over her mother and attempted to tackle her and knock her free from the battered woman beneath her. What I saw bowled me over. My partner, a sturdy built 200-pound, 6-foot-tall man, bounced off this little girl like she was batted away like a gnat. His body hit the ground with such force that it shook the floor. I raised the taser and I called out a final warning. "Stand up and put your hands up immediately, or I will shoot."
She turned to look at me. Her eyes were filled with such rage, such disgust. Her gaze was like a force of nature, and she opened her mouth and outpoured this hideous, deep, manly voice.
You do not belong here.
That was all I needed to see, and simultaneously, my partner and I shot our tasers at the little girl, giving her enough electricity to light up a Christmas tree. She just stood there, unfazed, untased, surrounded by the crackles and pops of electricity as it coursed through her. Now, maybe one of our tasers would fail, but both? That was impossible. So we charged her again. I went high, my partner went low, and together we knocked the little bitch clear of her mother. The frightening part was, she was the first to stand, and she stood her ground and opened her mouth. And I swear to God, in front of the Pope himself, that the sounds of 100 angry, tortured souls burst forth from her mouth, filling the room with a wall of sound that creeps me out to this day. I had been around, and I've dealt with people with mental problems, and I've done a lot of that in my career. I know what crazy looks like. This made crazy seem cuddly and fun. My feet felt rooted to their spot. I wanted to move, to grab her, but I couldn't. She just stood there howling at us. At this point, our backup showed up, bursting into the house, guns drawn as they expected a room full of angry bikers. And from the sound spilling onto the streets, I couldn't deny that. The girl began to back up and hiss at us. Then I heard the single most terrifying thing come from a parent's mouth that I have ever heard in all my years before and after this event. And she yelled out,
"For God's sake, shoot her if you have to!"
We moved in to try to isolate her from her panicked mother. Then she lowered her head and barked out to one of the responding officers to my left.
"How's your little bitch daughter? When I'm done here, she's next."
That was all he needed to hear. He ran at the girl. We all did. It took four of us, holding on for dear life to try to pin her to the ground and subdue her. That was when it seemed to subside. The little girl's eyes welled with tears, and she whispered,
What happened?"
We looked at each other with a puzzled expression, and our grips eased as her struggles ceased, and she just began to lay there, vulnerable, terrified. One by one, we climbed off until the first officer that charged her let go and stood over her. She slowly stood up, her shoulders trembling, holding back sobs, tears streaming down her face. And with all of our defenses down, she swung her leg up, connecting with the private area of the officer, and hit him with a loud thump. He fell to the ground, and the voice mocked us again.
"You're so easy,"
she sneered in her dark, manly voice. Without hesitation, the partner of the downed officer hit her hard against the side of the head with his fist, and she dropped to the floor unconscious. I looked at the mother and, in a half-pleading, half-demanding voice, yelled, "What the hell is wrong with your kid?" She righted herself, crying, and pointed to an open bedroom door. I turned, walked over, and expecting to see the room littered with drug paraphernalia, was surprised by the fact that the room was spotless and pink, just like you would expect from a 12-year-old girl. The only item that seemed out of place was a Ouija board, half peeking out from under the bed. I lifted it and carried it into the living room, where the mother was being tended to by EMTs and being questioned by my partner. The muted sounds of sirens approaching drew me back into the reality, and I held up the board. The distraught mother pointed to the board and said,
"It's all that damn board. She was never like this until that damn board came into this house."
At that point, she broke down into sobs again, and I removed the offending board, put it in my trunk, and sat in the car awaiting my partner's return. Try as I might, I cannot make sense of how this little girl threw grown men aside like rag dolls, could beat her mother, who was so clearly larger and more powerful, and do the things or say the things she did. The EMTs wheeled the gurney past me in the back of the ambulance. The girl was out and strapped to the cart for safety. I know she was brought to the local hospital and checked into the psych ward. We would often discuss what happened that day, trying with all the logic we could muster to persuade each other that she just had to have had split personality disorder. As an aside, I took that Ouija board to the local parish in my town, gave a brief description to the priest on duty. He nodded thoughtfully and said he knew just what to do with it and assured me the danger was over. Weeks later, we were called to that same church. A fire had broken out from inside a closed storage closet. The priest was rendered unconscious from the smoke, and we could find no rational reasoning to how or why the fire started. It wasn't until the priest was released that we did a follow-up, and he informed me that the closet he placed the Ouija board in after doing a quick blessing over was the closet that burst into flames.
Podcast compels you. The power of podcast compels you.
Beyond the Darkness is your podcast now. 5 days a week on podcast1.com and iTunes.
All right, we've got more with Rachel Stavis. This is just kind of fascinating to me, this whole concept and everything you're talking about. First of all, artwork on your book is phenomenal. Well done.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. I really love it. It's actually someone who specializes in creating pictures out of smoke. And so I don't know if you can see it.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So it's a woman's body.
Oh, I thought it was the Hamburglar. I was looking at it wrong. No, yeah, I can see the woman's body. Yeah, it's an amazing picture.
People miss it, but yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, it's a beautiful piece. Let's talk about your way of handling this, being a non-denominational exorcist. What does that mean?
Hard to say, isn't it? Right?
Right.
Hard to say the word. I mean,
non-denominational.
Not saying hard to say.
Right.
But yeah, so basically what that means is, I'm someone that anybody can come to. For example, I had a family come to me. I mean, I've had this many times, but this is one that I remember off the top of my head. I had a family come to me who had, it was a child situation where they believed that she was possessed, and she was about 9 years old at the time. And they had gone to the church first. And
but first of all, did they try to explain to you how they thought she was possessed? What about it? Made them believe she was possessed?
Hers was pretty bad. Hers was words, and it was very much movie style in that words and phrases were showing up on her body, places that she couldn't have done it herself. She wasn't eating, her personality changed. There was they thought they heard two voices several times. They were starting to see things in their own house.
Did they have any idea how
typical,
that... Yeah, did they have any idea how that began? I mean, were they, you know, did they sit there and power through, you know, all of the Paranormal Activity movies at their house, and then all of a sudden all hell is broken loose? How did a 9-year-old get possessed?
Well, they didn't know how it started. They didn't know what happened. They just knew that it had gone on for, I don't remember how long a time, maybe a month or so, when they really, she was very much deteriorating. And so she came here, well, they all came here, but before they did, when they contacted me the first time, they were telling me that the first, of course, as most people do, they go to their church first, if they go to church, right? Or they find a church. And they go to church first, and the church has very specific requirements for an exorcism if they even admit they didn't do it at all, right?
Right, right.
So, and I mean, people know that story. It was all over movies and TV. Like, you know, we have this checklist of things that we have to go through in order to give someone an exorcism. And that's not simple. I mean, that's very complicated. And so, of course, they went to the church first because that's what they knew to do. And the church told them that she was faking. And so they didn't know what to do. So they were recommended to me. I took her right away. And of course, because I can see entity with my eyes, I can see if someone is faking.
Right.
She was not faking. She had an entity. It was no question. And like I said, I took her on an emergency basis because I always take children on emergency basis. And
now, do you explain to the child what you're seeing?
Yes. And I do, to a point, right? I'm not going to do things to overwhelm or scare a child.
Right? Oh, you should see what's over your shoulder, Bobby. It's horrifying.
We're never going to do that.
It's sucking the marrow from another child's bones, Bobby. It's horrible.
No, but okay. I'll tell you why I do what I do. Right. And I'll tell you exactly what I do.
Okay.
I tell the child what entity they have. First of all, I tell the child, yes, you're not crazy. You have this. Because you're talking about children, and you're talking about, in general, in society, children are often not believed for things that they say or see, right? So I validate them right away. The next thing is I tell them what kind of entity it is. Because I have names for all these things, right? There's no handbook on it. I named all these things. I see them. I named them. And when you name something and you can tell the child, this is what you have. His name is Clive. That's what I do, right? All of a sudden, it's not as frightening as it was. There's a power over that. There's a control over that. Now, the child doesn't know how to let go of this entity, relinquish the entity. They don't know how to do that. But suddenly, there's something tangible that they can see and feel. They know what's happening to them. They know what it is. And the next thing that I do is I tell them how small that entity is in comparison to them. That it feels overwhelming. And in fact, that's what a Clive actually does. A Clive, smallest of all entities, easiest to remove, is the one that amplifies. It's a megaphone for everything that you're going on, that's going on in you. So if you are, you know, depressed, you might be suicidal. If you are nervous, you have anxiety. You know, if you are angry, you now have rage. That's the kind of thing that that does. And as anybody who has gone through those feelings, entity related or not, can tell you, right, those things are very overwhelming. And so even though it's a little entity, it megaphones everything out. So it makes itself really big feeling. And so when a child has that, imagine how overwhelmed that can be. Like, that's very overwhelming because children are such sensitive feelers. So knowing that they have this, number one, that they're not crazy. Number two, that this thing is not as powerful as it seems. And number three, they are much more powerful than they knew before they walked in, makes a lot of difference.
So you're giving them a bit of a psychological edge first so that they feel like they're in control and that this thing is not, so that they, you're kind of empowering them to begin the battle from within.
And that's necessary.
Right.
And I do that with everyone, everyone. I tell them what they have first. Here's what it is. Here's what that often does. Here's what causes that. Here's the trauma that normally brings something like that in, right?
Right.
Here's what to expect during this process. Here's everything that's going to happen. Here's everything that you're going to feel, and here's what to expect when you leave. Everything, you get all of that. Because it is very important for you to understand, as we were talking about earlier, right? We are very powerful beings. We are much more powerful than entity. But we don't know that, right? Somewhere along the way, we've lost that connection.
Okay.
And so when you are then sitting with me, let's say, and you are overwhelmed by how bad you feel, you need to know right away that the thing that you're feeling is not as powerful as you are. And that's the truth.
I like it. So you're kind of the Tony guru or Tony Robbins guru of the paranormal here.
Tony Robbins very taps in.
Yes, very.
Very. Very spiritual. Yes, it's true. I mean, yes, I guess so. But the reason why I do it, right, is because it's the truth. And that's right. The thing that we have lost. We have lost our connection to spirit. We have lost our connection to consciousness. We have lost our ability to manifest for ourselves. We have lost a lot of those things. And so when you are walking around in an unconscious state of low frequency, that's where everything can take from you. And of course, you're going to feel like you don't have anything, right? That it's just low. It just stays in this low cycle. And that's not accurate. You have the power to change that cycle anytime. Anytime. We can reinvent our lives every day.
All right. Now you get a call on this and you go to battle with one of these creatures to try to get rid of it. And the child or adult that is dealing with this, do they have to be careful afterwards because they're easy to reattach to by other spirits or that same entity
Yes.
coming back? Or once you rip them out, are they unable to attach again?
So when I remove an entity from you, I destroy the entity. So there's no entity left. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean anything, because what happens is, yes, when you're done in here, for some reason, I don't have the exacts on this, but for some reason, there is a 3-day cycle of healing after you leave me. So it's like psychic surgery, if you will, right? We open you up. I tear you wide open. That's how this works, in essence. And it takes, like a wound, 3 days to close up. While you are open, of course, you are more susceptible for all kinds of things, you know, the etheric things, spiritual things coming in. And you're also very raw during that time, because when you remove entity and then trauma. So I actually don't just remove the entity. I remove the frequency signature that attracts the entity in the first place. So whatever trauma you're holding in the body that emitted that frequency, I remove it.
Okay.
Because what's the point of taking the entity out if you're leaving the signature?
Right.
So it doesn't make any sense, right? So we try to, like, I clear everything I can out of you.
You're clearing the cash and the cookies and keeping that computer clean.
Right. I'm clearing your porn.
Right.
So we're taking all of that out. And when that happens, you're very raw. And again, it's like I talked about earlier, we're dealing with root issues, not just the branches of those trees. So what happens when you take all of those things out is that all the suppression of feelings that you had attached to that, all the memories, visions, whatever it is that's attached to that, will start coming up for that 3-day period because they're being released. And it's a slow process. So those things will come up. So you're very emotional during that time. Sometimes people get through it. It's different for everyone. Like, sometimes people have the best 3 days of their life, and sometimes people don't want to talk to anybody for 3 days. It just depends on your personal journey of that. But during that time, yes, you're much more open to attachment potentially. So, you know, we have that discussion before people leave, you know, what to expect for the next 3 days. If you feel this, if you think this, if something like this comes in, you know that it's not you, that it's most likely entity, excuse me. And if it's entity, this is how you deal with that in the next 3-day period.
All right. So you walk them through the entire healing process and how to deal with this.
It's really important, because there's no way you would know that, and you're right. Going to be caught off guard. Like, literally, I have people, you know, it sounds very movie style, I guess, but I do have people throwing up quite a bit. And when they leave, sometimes they get flu-like symptoms and things like that as well, all normal. But if you didn't know that ahead of time, you might think, who knows what, you know?
Right. Now, you said you could tell if people are faking it. Do you believe people are faking it, or do you think that they've come to you because they firmly believe they have an entity? And if they do, and you tell them, no, there's nothing there, how do they react?
I've never seen someone who has nothing. Let's just put it that way. But I definitely have seen some interesting folks who wish they had more. So they'll come in and they'll be like, I'm a really dark guy. I'm super dark. I'm the darkest guy, probably the darkest guy you've ever seen. And they've got like a Clive. And I'm like, well, you may be the darkest guy, but you have the smallest entity.
Hey, now, it's not the size of the entity that counts, you know.
Right, exactly. How you use your entity, of course.
That's right. Not the size of the entity, it's the power of the possession that compels you.
Exactly. So, yeah, so some people have been a bit disappointed that they're not, you know, more hardcore.
That they're not the new Anton LaVey.
Yes, exactly. Right. They're like, sure, I'm not the Antichrist. Can you check again?
Oh, gosh. All right. So once you've got them realizing that they're not, you know, the second coming of the Antichrist here.
They're so sad.
Right. Yeah. And it's sad, right? Because I've met people like that have, they've rid themselves of a ghost that they didn't want, and now they feel almost lost.
Well, that does happen. Actually, that happens with entity a lot. So there are entities called tricksters, or I call them tricksters, that will appear to people, and those are ones actually that start in childhood most of the time, not all the time, but start in childhood if they get a chance. And those particular entities are ones that show themselves to their host. So those ones will appear as something you want to see. They will show up as, like, for children, for example, imaginary friends, genies, all kinds of things. And if they're older, maybe not even older, if the child has experienced a loss, they'll show up as the deceased person. They'll show up as angels. They'll show up as anything. Anything that makes you feel comfortable. And what happens with tricksters is oftentimes because they're showing up as something that makes the person feel secure, they believe the visual that they're seeing and they keep the entity. So they form this kind of symbiotic relationship with that entity. And they will carry that entity for years and years and years and years of their lives until they understand fully that that entity is actually causing problems in their life. But it takes a while to pull that kind of entity out. And the reason why is because people don't want to let it go. They say they do, they say they're ready, but then they don't. So what'll happen is I can pull that particular trickster out and destroy that trickster. Then the person will leave feeling empty. And since they're in that empty low frequency space again, they will attract another trickster. But how a trickster works is they pull from memory. So what they will do is project the same image to you, like they've come back.
Gotcha. Hence the name trickster.
Yes. Right. So okay. they'll come back to me sometimes three times. But a person who is like, I thought I got rid of it and I didn't.
Right. Well, isn't that kind of, I mean, that's got to be disheartening for you and for them, you know, if they think they're getting rid of something and there's something new that comes in, you know, I mean, it's like getting rid of the horrible boyfriend or girlfriend because, God, they were pushy and obnoxious and rude, and you get rid of them and you meet the next one and they're pushy and obnoxious and rude and you're like, no, how the hell did this happen again? When you get rid of that one and the next one is the same way.
Right.
Right. I mean, If you're telling us that this, you know, just kind of you throw the handful of sand out and more sand just pours back in, is there any way to ever shield ourselves completely against these kind of attacks and these beings?
Well, in that case, you know, it's really being consciously ready to release it. So why we go into the same pattern of relationships is because we're not ready to let go of that pattern. It's the same thing with an entity like that. You say you're ready to let go of it, but you're really actually not. You have to go through whatever learning experience you still need to go through to rid yourself of that, right?
Right.
With entity in general, again, the thing that will keep you from having an attachment and or changing the status of your attachment is raising your frequency, learning how to change that vibration so that what you're emitting is not attracting that anymore, right? Again, same with boyfriends, right? What you're emitting is not attracting the same kind of douche.
Wow. And right? you're cutting in and out again. Electronics are going bonkers as you're talking about this.
Of course. Because we're talking about how to fix it, right?
Right, exactly. It does not want to be heard. Go ahead.
No, I was saying, you know, in case it didn't come through, that we have to change the pattern of the energy we're putting out, right? That's mm-hmm. what we have to do. We have to change that for all aspects of our life, and entity is not different.
Okay. All right, so it's learning how to avoid and put yourself in situation. Like, you don't want to get rid of the one entity and then go right back to the singles bar where you met that entity to begin with, right?
No, right. You can't be going to the same bars.
Right.
Cannot, right? You're just going to get the same asshole. You can't do that. That's how it works. Like, you have to change your pattern. You have to be like, I'm not going to the bar tonight. I'm going to drink at home or whatever you're going to do.
Drink at home.
Right? That's what you have to do. So it's not different. And like I said, you know, when somebody comes to me, we're fast. I can pull out an entity. It's like pizza delivery now. Like, I'm very honed at it.
It's pizza delivery.
Well, you know, it's not
like by the
minutes,
time you get done hugging me, hello, you've already yanked two entities out of my ass is what you're saying.
Basically, like, you would honestly be surprised how many entities come in here with a person and leave before I even start. Cause they're like, oh no, I'm not doing this. I'm done with this. I'm the jig is up. Like, I'm done. But yeah, it's very fast for me now. For most entities, not all entities, but I can pretty much take entities out in my personal space in 45 minutes to 2 hours, depending on the entity. For someone to raise their frequency, that's going to be a daily push. It's not as fast. But you can do that. You can push an entity that's attached to you out. Because what happens when you raise your frequency is there's nothing for them to actually exchange energetically with you anymore. They can't feed. So the higher your frequency, the less likely that you will ever have entities because there's nothing for them to take.
All right. All right. I could buy into that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, just even if you don't believe anything I'm saying, why not raise your frequency anyway?
There's no harm in it. Right.
Right. It's not going to hurt you.
You don't have to believe me, you smell, but why not take the shower anyway, right?
That's what I'm saying, right? My job isn't going to change from your opinion, but you should raise your frequency.
Have you ever been afraid doing the job that you're doing? Do you ever get in sometimes and start worrying for your own life?
It's not often. I'm going to say no overall because I know what I'm capable of. I know what I can do. I've been in very, very dramatic situations with entities. I've dealt with entities that are what people consider the devil, very dark, very high on the food chain entities, very rare entities. And I've come out of it okay. So at this point, I'm pretty confident that I can kick demon ass.
Was there ever a point when you were doing this, when you were starting out, that you were afraid? What was that like then?
In the beginning, because I wasn't sure exactly how to do what I was doing, there were times where, you know, entities do sometimes talk through people and they do those things that you see in the movies where they'll know shit about you or they'll try to distract you or lie or whatever. And in the beginning, it is really hard to pull yourself out of that. So in those cases, it was scary. But now I'm so used to those kinds of behaviors that it doesn't affect me anymore. And now I know, you know, again, it's like nobody would want a scared exorcist. Let's put it that way. Right? You don't want a scared exorcist. Because I have to make sure that my frequency is high all the time. And in dealing with entity, the higher my frequency, the less they can do anything to me anyway, even the worst of the worst ones. But the higher you go on that food chain, the stronger they are too.
I've got to guess, and I know this is going to sound like I'm being a smart ass, and I really don't mean it to be. You live in Los Angeles.
Oh, yes.
I just came back from Los Angeles. You've got some weird flipping people in Los Angeles. And I don't mean that rudely. I'm sure they're some of the most charming. But there's a lot of dark, weird things going on there.
That's true.
And especially in the entertainment business.
Also very true. Yeah.
What is that like? I mean, have you come across, and you don't have to name the celebrity unless you want to, Ryan Seacrest, that you've come across that is just filled with demons, and you know this person is on the verge of insanity, Ryan Seacrest. Just tell me if any of these things have ever happened to you, Ryan Seacrest, because I think that there are a few people out there, without naming names, Ryan Seacrest, that are dealing with this kind of evil energy.
Yes. Okay. So without getting into too many specifics.
Okay.
It's not unknown completely and totally that there are secret societies in Los Angeles and all kinds of dark things that go on here via celebrity. Look up any conspiracy of those things and they'll come right up.
Right.
There's a lot of that goes on here. There are a lot of different things that, yes, are quite dark. And yes, I have seen many very famous people who were once part of those things. Let's say that, okay? And are no longer necessarily part of those things.
Sure.
It's those particular people, sometimes, again, most of the time, entities don't share a body. They don't share. They feed one at a time. They will fight each other outside of that body to take the body, if that makes sense. They're selfish. They like to feed themselves. But again, there are different entities in different hierarchies. And so the ones that have had the people, the celebrities who have higher influence, who have been part of those other very dark things where, again, you're talking about super low frequency and calling things in and all kinds of stuff, they tend to have higher order entities. Why? Because those entities are affecting massive amounts of people through that person. So I have seen that. I've seen that many times. When they come to me, I'm always successful at taking it out, knock on wood, 100% success rate. However, I don't know what they're going to do when they leave, right? It's sort of up to you what you do with that clean slate once you leave. And not everybody continues on a path to rising. Let's say that.
Okay.
Some people go straight back to darkness, which is very unfortunate both for me and for them. Because for me, I've spent my time trying to help that person. And at this point, I used to be very, very sad when I would see that. I'd get very affected by that. And I had to learn not to be. Because I had to learn, right, that I can't control what anybody does. Right? We make choices for ourselves. That's the beauty of free will. So I used to get so affected by that when I would see not just celebrities, but just in general, when people would kind of go back down. It was upsetting. Now I understand that that's part of their path. You know, they have to make those choices for themselves. And if they go back down, they go back down. And, you know, when they're ready to really let go and go back up again, they might see me again.
Have you run across people that we would be surprised that have these kind of evil attachments? Paula Abdul, anything like that?
Yes, I think people would be very surprised. I think in general, people would be surprised at just the amount and frequency people have entity. Because again, going back to the church, because that's what everybody kind of knows when they think about possession and demons and things like that. Mm-hmm. You know, the church always says it's exceptionally rare. I'm telling you, it's not. It's not. It's not rare. Being someone who can see it, it's not rare at all. So, yes, just like everybody else, many, many celebrities have entity, sure. You know? And what people don't know also, I think, about celebrity lifestyles, too, is I think that people, you know, when they haven't been on the other side of the fence of being a public person in general, which I am just now learning myself because I was in happy bliss of obscurity for a very long time, which is no longer the case. I think that people just assume that celebrities have great lives and have everything that they want and, you know, live the life. And that's not the case, obviously for everybody. There are celebrities still struggle with depression, anxiety, feeling unwanted, dealing with the burden of being a celebrity or having people speaking about them on the internet or, you know, paparazzi or whatever's going on in their lives and living a public spectacle. And that's not easy. And it's very difficult to keep your vibration up in that space as well.
What has been one of the most fascinating aspects of this that you've learned? I know we're running out of time here, but I'm just curious in doing this, what has really been a turning point, just a freaky notion for you?
Oh, wow. I have to think about that for a second. I think the freakiest, well, I don't know if it's freaky. I think people will think it's freaky though. What I've learned that was most exciting for me out of this whole process of being able to see, entity has also been the flip side of that, which has been my ability to see high beings, which are also entities, but in a different sense. Being able to see angels with my eyes. It didn't always start out that way. I didn't understand what I was seeing as a child when it came to nice light things because they didn't look like monsters. Sometimes right. It would just be like light. Now it's more clear. A lot of times they come to me showing themselves like they do, you know, like people have painted them. And I don't think that's necessarily how they look, but they're trying to show that that's what they are. In my opinion, that's what I'm seeing. It's been really cool to be able to experience that and have high beings around you and be able to see them and be able to feel how, just like you can feel how malevolent certain entities are, very sickening, malevolent feelings, you can feel how warm and amazing having a high being is around you. And it just
reminds
me. Can
we call on them? Can we
oh, yes.
tell them 100%. To come forward?
All the time. And they wait for that. They want you to. Just like your deceased loved ones want to hear from you. They want you to say, can you give me a sign that you're here? Can you show me something? Can you drop coins, feathers, whatever, whatever. They will do that. Because these are beings that want to be utilized and seen and heard. Unlike entity, which wants to hide, hide, hide. That's what they want to do. They want to hide inside you. That's why people don't know they have it.
All right. Fascinating stuff. I'm intrigued, and I'd love to hear more of your stories as time progresses. So please come back with us. Share stories, especially when you've got like one of the darkest forces you'll ever encounter, Ryan Seacrest, and let me know what it was like to have to battle that demon at some point.
Sister, he comes, I'll let you know.
Sister of Darkness, the Chronicles of a Modern Exorcist, Rachel Stavis, our guest this evening. That's it for another week of the best in paranormal talk radio. Remember to check us out again next week. And Tim will be back with us on Monday. Plus, we have another brand new edition of True Crime Tuesday. And here's something cool. In case you guys missed it this last week, we aired one of our episodes from a few weeks ago on our Patreon pay site of True Crime Tuesday. So you can actually go hear one episode for free. It was our Tuesday show this week on Beyond the Darkness. Give you a reason to understand why you should go sign up for the best in True Crime Talk Radio as well. So go check that out. Listen to the Tuesday show. Hear one of our favorite episodes from True Crime Tuesday and get a little taste for it for yourself. If you're already ready to sign up, just go to darknessradio.com. Click on the True Crime Tuesday banner and make your subscription choice there. You'll be able to sign up $5 a month, only $1.25 per episode is what it breaks down to. And you can do it just monthly, month to month. Give it a shot. See what you think. I think you're going to like what we have to share with you. That's it for this week. Be kind, be loving. We'll be back with you again next week right here on Beyond the Darkness.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
There's nothing like sinking into luxury. At WashableSofas.com, you'll find the Anabe Sofa, which combines ultimate comfort and design at an affordable price. And get this, it's the only sofa that's fully machine washable from top to bottom, starting at only $699. The stain-resistant performance fabric slipcovers and cloud-like frame duvet can go straight into your wash. Perfect for anyone with kids, pets, or anyone who loves an easy-to-clean, spotless sofa. With a modular design and changeable slipcovers, you can customize your sofa to fit any space and style. Whether you need a single chair, love seat, or a luxuriously large sectional, Anabe has you covered. Visit WashableSofas.com to upgrade your home. Right now, you can shop up to 60% off store-wide with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Shop now at WashableSofas.com. Add a little to your life. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.